from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The supermajority Democrats are focused on two things: bailing out the city of Chicago, which has been corrupt and mismanaged and financially bereft for years, and forcing a tax hike without reforms.
I'm committed to finding the balance with the governor that is needed to move forward, but it's hard to work with him, let alone agree with him, when he's embarked on a scorched earth tour of Illinois, a tour, I would note, that began the morning of June 1st.
These insults are creating an acidic environment that is not productive to working together.
And anybody who says, well, we can't work together because you were mean to me yesterday, oh, come on, grow up, calm down.
This is about to be summertime. There's summer reading. My recommendation to the governor for his summer reading list is Herman Melville's maybe Moby Dick. Because Captain Ahab, in his obsession to get Moby Dick, takes the Pequod over, and it doesn't really end well.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. We just heard there from Governor Bruce Rauner, Senate President John Cullerton, and Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Emanuel was speaking on the WTTW program Chicago Tonight. After spending 17 months fighting over the governor's agenda, in the end of May fighting about a temporary spending plan, now Democrats and Republicans are fighting about political fighting itself. That's right, Illinois government has gone meta. I'm Brian Mackey, but you can call me Ishmael. With me in studio in Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime State House observer. And from public radio station WBEZ in Chicago, Lauren Chulgen, who covers city politics, and Tony Arnold, who covers state politics. Sean Crawford and Amanda Vinicky are away. So, Lauren and Tony, I'm going to begin with you. As we sit down to record on Friday, it's been 345 days since the state of Illinois last had a officially enacted budget. Governor Rauner is continuing his Democrats are terrible tour around the state. Can you sort of give us where he began that this week, touring Illinois?
Yeah, it began, it began this round, I guess I should say, is that this is not the first time this has happened, obviously. Monday, just to go through the timeline here, Governor Rauner had a news conference in Chicago with reporters and said that two things that really took off and kind of set the tone, I think, for where we ended up here on Friday. One is that his biggest disappointment as governor is Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And what was noteworthy of that is that he got attacked pretty quickly for your biggest disappointment isn't that we haven't had a budget for almost the last year now, or that there hasn't been a real compromise, or that anything else. It's your biggest disappointment is that Emanuel hasn't stood up to House Speaker Michael Madigan, according to Rauner. And then the second thing that he said was that Chicago Public Schools, some of them that he's been in are like crumbling prisons.
Presumably not the one that he clouded his daughter into.
Presumably he wasn't talking about Walter Payton Prep, which is like a very, you know, it's a highly sought after school in Chicago. But he hasn't specified all week which school he was referring to. And then there's been a lot of kind of back and forth about, you know, Chicago Public Schools have some really big issues, including lately this week, there's lead in the water, high levels of lead in the water. And Rauner kind of, he gave generalizations about, well, I'm referring to high levels of security that are in these schools, or just the dilapidated buildings, or bars on the windows, that kind of thing.
That make him cry when he goes into
that. And so it's not clear exactly which schools he's referring to, but the message that he made was really thrown right back at him, saying that you're referring to a Chicago alderman, which Lauren can talk about a little bit more, said that these are racist comments and that Rauner's making, that he wouldn't say this if he were referring to a school district that was majority white, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah. And so to tee up what the mayor said in response to this first punch of the week, the mayor ended up saying that it looks like Governor Rauner is running for vice president for Donald Trump, which is a connection, any connection to Donald Trump is one that Governor Rauner obviously doesn't take very lightly, considering the fact that he really tries hard not to mention Donald Trump's name in public, whether it's at a rally for state Republicans or whether it's when he's giving normal press conferences. And so that kind of loaded up the arsenal for Rauner to come back. But before he could do so, the mayor has been going on WTTW Chicago Tonight about once every month for the last couple months. And he, without being prompted in any way, he was not asked, what do you think Rauner should read this summer? He was not asked, you know, what kind of public media spin on the debate do you have here, Mr. Mayor? No, he just was waiting for someone to say Mike Madigan, I think, and he just came right out with this idea that he has that Governor Rauner should read Moby Dick because it is, of course, the classic tale of Captain Ahab being obsessed with this elusive white whale, and so he takes the ship down with it. So in the mayor's casting and retelling, Governor Rauner would be Captain Ahab, Mike Madigan, the elusive white whale that he, Captain Ahab, is obsessed with, and then the people of Illinois are all going down with the sinking ship. So that was the left hook, so to speak, from Mayor Emanuel back to the disappointing comment from Governor Rauner.
So, Charlie, this is an age-old political tactic in Illinois, right? Big bad Chicago wants to take things away from downstate, and this has kind of been one of the governor's key messages since the session ended, in his words, in stunning failure. He's been, this time, as we heard from Lauren and Tony, he was in Chicago, but for the most part, he's been staying far away from Chicago when he's been pounding the drum for his message.
Yeah, he's been touring downstate, and he's, as you say, it's an age-old theme. You tell the folks downstate how bad Chicago is, and all their money goes to Chicago and the corrupt machine and all that nonsense that apparently is the standard line of attack for the governor. And there's a certain irony, just for the heck of it, when he began a week ago, I guess it was more than a week ago now, he was in Vienna, Illinois. And so out of curiosity, I looked to see the schools in Vienna, what percentage of their revenues comes from the state. And they actually get something like 44-45% of their school revenue from the state of Illinois. City of Chicago gets about 35%. So he's down there telling the folks in Vienna, your dollar shouldn't be going to Chicago. All the while, folks in Vienna, and I've been to Vienna, it's a charming community, and I don't begrudge them. I think they should get more money. I think all schools in Illinois should get more money. But they actually get a larger percentage of their budget paid for by the state than the city of Chicago does. Plus, another thing that the governor conveniently ignores, taxpayers in Chicago, through property taxes, pay the pension costs for their teachers. Residents outside the city of Chicago and the suburbs and downstate don't contribute to the employer directly through property taxes, through the employer's share of pension costs. Instead, the state picks up the tab. And so people in Chicago pay pension costs for their teachers and then for teachers everywhere else in the state. So, I mean, there's a little bit of equity here. And this notion that Chicago is big and bad and, we should get rid of Chicago, cut it off from the state of Illinois and all that nonsense. Illinois without Chicago would be like North Kentucky.
So, Tony, I'm going to turn back to you. There was a headline I'm paraphrasing in the Tribune. I thought it was succinct. Governor Rauner calls for end to political attacks before launching into yet another political attack. You had a story on that very topic this week. I think we're going back to Wednesday. The governor called a news conference in the Capitol. Senate President John Cullerton responded with his own news conference up in Big Bad Chicago. Are we really debating the debate at this point?
A little bit, yeah. So as Governor Rauner is talking to reporters in Springfield, there is a meeting among some rank and file lawmakers happening behind closed doors. This is a working group that's been meeting off and on for the last several months now, and this group has been kind of like given the big the big task of work it out, work out the big issues that are going on and come up with a deal. So these two things are happening at the same time. Rauner's having a press conference and where he's criticizing Chicago Democrats and the Chicago machine, political machine, going back a little bit to some of the talking points that he had during his campaign for governor and even after he won the governor's mansion. These two things are happening, and this is I think to your point, like debating the debate. Cullerton 2 hours later says, so Rauner's criticizing the people who are in this room supposed to be working out a deal, and their phones are blowing up saying Rauner's criticizing us, and the people in the room are saying, well, what are we doing here? The governor's bad-mouthing us when we're doing what the leaders have asked us to do, which is figure something out. How much of the and then Rauner's response is like, I can call you names and you can still work out a deal. Come on, we aren't second graders here. And Cullerton's point is like, this is a distraction. Like everything that you're doing here to call somebody corrupt and criticize Chicago, this is a distraction to working out a deal. Now the people in the room, I've heard kind of conflicting reports about how distracting this was. One was saying, I mean, we had our meeting and we still went on and it was fine. And the other person said, well, we're all looking at our phones and seeing what's going on. And the Republicans are trying to tell us, don't worry about what Rauner's saying, but how can we not worry about what the governor of the state of Illinois is saying when we're trying to come up with something here that he's going to have to sign off on for this to actually work. So that's kind of setting the tone of, I think, where we are right now. And if you want to know like just where we are as a, how close we are to working out a budget deal, well, they can't even agree on whether insults affect the negotiations or not. So I don't think we're that close to a budget deal right now.
Yeah, well, and I kind of wonder, even if there is some sort of compromise, not a grand compromise, but a small compromise on some sort of stopgap spending plan to get kind of limp through the election season, it's not as though that means that they're going to disarm for the election season or be any, you know, oh, suddenly we won't try to take those seats away from Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton, and that the Democrats won't, right, you know, defend themselves or try to even pick up some seats.
And I think you saw that this week and the other kind of big thing that happened, which is like the Illinois' credit rating was downgraded by multiple agencies once again. And the response from Rauner is to blame Speaker Madigan. The response from Speaker Madigan is to blame Bruce Rauner. And so you can apply that, whether it's the state's credit rating being downgraded, whether it's how negotiations are going, whether it's political insults matter to negotiations, all these things, it's not us, it's them. It's not them, it's us. And it's just back and forth. And so it's definitely campaign season. You're seeing that. You're seeing that in the staffing decisions that the governor's made. He's moving some people around today. So there's just a number of different things that all point to it's the campaign season. And none of it gets any closer to actually working out like how our school is going to be funded in the fall.
Well, and we learned from, or you learned from Leslie Munger this week, that all of the baby bill funding bills that they've done that just fund like lottery winners or certain other services, that doesn't mean that they'll be funded next year. There has to be a lot more of those tiny funding bills passed again, which I didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. And so there's negotiating that has to go on a lot of levels, but it doesn't seem like anyone wants to play nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened with all the spending that the legislature has approved, it was all for fiscal year 2016, which ends June 30th. So the ability to spend money from those appropriations, those authorizations, ceases to exist when the clock strikes midnight on June 30th.
Right.
And so if you want to pay lottery winners, if you want to do... if you want to have money for elementary and secondary education, all those federal funds that were appropriated, you have to reappropriate them again. And that's been the standard practice for, I don't know, I guess since 1818, although up until 1970, we did it 2 years at a time. But you always do an annual budget and you appropriate the money for the coming fiscal year.
Starting July 1st.
Yeah.
July 1st is the deadline. So,
well, July 1st is when the new fiscal year starts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a deadline, although I think we saw last year that nobody really seems to take it that seriously, in some circles at least.
Well, and the only exception this time around, there are some things that are required by law. For example, the payments into the pension system happen automatically. The law that sets up the ability for the state to sell bonds requires that those payments be made to the bondholders automatically. It doesn't matter if the legislature appropriates a single penny. That happens automatically. The comptroller sends the money out. By the same token, the St. Clair County judge who ordered state employees to be paid, despite the fact that there's no appropriation to cover the salaries, that court order goes on until the judge says it doesn't, or until some higher court rescinds it. And so state employees will continue to be paid, but lottery winners won't, unless there's another appropriation passed by the General Assembly, or unless somebody who has a winning lottery ticket and gets stiffed by the state goes to court and some judge orders that that be paid.
This is State Week. Our panel is Charlie Wheeler, and from WBEZ in Chicago, Lauren Chulgen and Tony Arnold. I'm Brian Mackey. Lauren, I want to return to Mayor Emanuel. You cover him pretty closely. He's had a pretty rough patch in his administration, going back at least to the end of last year and the alleged cover-up of the Laquan McDonald shooting by Chicago police. And now Governor Rauner's been piling on, calling it a great disappointment. These are two people who were thought to be friends at one point. There was that famous photograph during the campaign of Emanuel holding a very, 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 very expensive bottle of wine while vacationing with the Rauners. Was there ever a chance that Emanuel was going to help Rauner, particularly on the anti-union aspects of his agenda?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a very strong Democrat, right? I mean, Mayor Emanuel wants to help. As he always says, he wants to bring everyone to the table when he comes up with these pension deals. He wants everybody to have a say, whether it's the taxpayers, the teachers, or what have you. He always says that, you know, I've always been for workers' comp reform. The governor and I have talked about that before, and I think it's a really good idea. But he says consistently, like, that's never going to be above the budget. That's never going to be more important than managing the state and making sure that it's on the right fiscal track. And so from the get-go, I think the mayor's stance has been that regardless of the fact that they're friends, it's not something that he feels is as important as a budget. Their friendship has been something that I think people enjoy bringing up and discussing, and the two of them have kind of a funny way of bringing it up in public themselves. I think that, you know, the mayor's tactic is always to be that, you know, if we ask him, well, how are conversations going with the governor? He'll either say one of two things. One, you should ask the governor that, or two, I don't discuss my conversations that are private in public. Then I wouldn't have the confidence of the people I trust. And those are always the two go-to things he consistently says. You know, it's politics, though, right? I mean, I don't know what this public battle has. I don't know if there's any reflection on their private friendship. You know, for all we know, this is just what they've decided to say to each other in public for the day. I don't know that this has any bearing on the way that their families interact or the way that their wives continue conversations or not. I mean, and I don't think any of us will know that unless they care to share that publicly. But it does make for an interesting twist in this debate that these two are not just known friends, but they've even said in explaining the beginning of their relationship and how they met that fighting has always been at the core of their friendship. And from the beginning of their friendship, when Mayor Emanuel first met Bruce Rauner, Governor Rauner tells it that he was just obnoxious in his relentless aggression. So I think, you know, it's kind of a funny relationship to watch because, like I say, we don't really know what's happening behind the scenes, but we do know that fighting seems to be what they do best.
Well, I'm really glad you pointed out about the mayor's repeated statements that the budget comes before these other things that he might be willing to sign on to. And I think we've heard that message from a lot of Democrats, Tony. And that's, I think the Republicans are now saying that, well, you know, this so-called turnaround agenda, workers' comp, we're not asking for those things for the temporary budget. But there are other sticking points, right, Tony? I mean, be it funding for Chicago mm-hmm. public schools, there's some other things. And there's even there is currently sitting on the governor's desk waiting to be signed or vetoed or ignored, as it has been so far, a human service spending bill that the governor finds somewhat objectionable.
Right. I think to go back a little bit about the Rauner and Emanuel relationship, I think that the way to hear Rauner put it, say it, he says, well, we're always going to be friends, and like whatever happens politically doesn't change that. But I think to his point about his criticism of Emanuel for not standing up to Madigan, I think Rauner thinks if the mayor of Chicago, Madigan's home district, you know, where Madigan's home district is, if he were to say, I agree with what Rauner's trying to do or put more pressure on Madigan, as if that would change the outcome in some way of where we are now. Like the mayor of Chicago has this power to flip where this impasse in Rauner's direction, because Rauner's whole point is that there are a lot of Democrats and the mayor of Chicago agree with me in private, but publicly they're afraid of House Speaker Michael Madigan. You can believe that if you want to or not, but I think that I think that there's still some in this hypothetical that Rauner's addressing here about whether Emanuel has this influence to make Democrats go his way and not the House Speaker's way. I don't know that would, if that were to even happen, which it's not going to, but if that were, I don't know that would necessarily even change where we are now, and like that would actually change the votes. Emanuel obviously does have some influence in Springfield. We've seen that on display a few times, most recently through a pension bill that affects only police and firefighters in Chicago, and Emanuel got a few Republicans to break from Rauner and override a veto of a bill that gets the changes that Emanuel wanted for the pensions of these police and firefighters. And Rauner's still talking about that veto override this week, saying that this was bad policy. He's still bringing it up as part of his evidence of why he's disappointed in Emanuel. So, I don't know how much Emanuel's influence would really change anything else that's going on here if Emanuel were to change how he's talking about this. But, you know, to the overall point of where we are now, yes, there is like a social services bill, another temporary bill sitting on Rauner's desk that the governor still hasn't quite said what he plans to do with while they're still negotiating. I think he still has some time to act on that while they're still trying to negotiate even a longer term temporary budget, stopgap budget, whatever you want to call it.
So, Charlie, Tony says the governor thinks that Rahm Emanuel and a lot of Democrats are behind him. You can believe it or not. Do you believe it?
No, I don't believe it until you name names. I mean, that's like he's gone in these Chicago schools and he cries when he sees the conditions. And reporters say, well, which schools? And he can't seem to remember. It's all empty rhetoric. I could claim that I won the Nobel Prize. And you could say, well, show me the money. And I could say, well, just trust me. I mean, unless you can produce people, and I think it'd be very difficult for most Democrats to do the kind of things that Rauner wants to organize labor. I've said this before. It's kind of in the genetic makeup of Democrats to stand up for organized labor and for working people. Governor Rauner sees public employee unions as kind of a scourge on the body politic. Most Democrats look at them as being a way for average men and women to stand up to the moneyed interests like the Bruce Rauners of the world. And so you're not going to get Democrats. If Mike Madigan were suddenly to decide, I want to go and be a monk and go to some abbey and become a Trappist for the rest of his life, the Illinois House is not going to cut back on collective bargaining rights the way Rauner wants it to. It's not going to do away with prevailing wage as Rauner wants it to. I mean, those are core issues for Democrats, any more than you would expect Republicans to suddenly come out and embrace the idea that we should have a graduated income tax. You know, it's just not part of their makeup.
Yeah.
So and so it's unrealistic for Rauner to expect that. And it's also the power of the Chicago mayor has changed dramatically from when I was a reporter even. And in the days of Richard J. Daley, yeah, the Chicago mayor could dictate terms in the General Assembly to Democrats from Chicago who made up most of the Democratic contingent because of the way districts were drawn and because of the fact that downstate and suburbs elected mostly Republicans. And so he could tell legislators what to do. He could cut deals with Republican governors, as he did with Richard Ogilvie, to enact an income tax. But that power has waned. Part of it is court decisions that have taken away patronage power. So Emanuel hasn't nearly the tools that the Dailies had in that office.
Well, so we will be talking more about that in the future, I'm sure. We need to leave that topic for now. To Tony and Lauren in Chicago, we saw Donald Trump in the news much this week. You can't have a political talk show without talking about Donald Trump, I guess. Congresswoman Duckworth launched a website attacking her rival, Senator Mark Kirk. Who said it, Trump or Kirk, comparing their public statements. Then we had Speaker of the House, the U.S. House, Paul Ryan, claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment, talking about Trump. And then we saw Senator Kirk taking some action on the presumptive Republican nominee.
Yes, some big news from Senator Kirk. And in fact, it's been a really fascinating section of this race to watch, is if you watch elected Illinois Republicans and other big Republicans in the state and how they are reacting to Donald Trump. And the next chapter in that saga was this week when Senator Kirk said that the comments that Donald Trump made about this federal judge who is overseeing the Trump University case, or ruling over the Trump University case, Senator Kirk said that was just, that was too much for him. They were racist, and they were, un-American. He said, no, it was un-American and dead wrong. That's what it was. And essentially he came out and said that his comments about the disabled, his comments about Hispanics, his comments about women, you know, they've just all added up for Senator Kirk. And he had an interesting line in his statement about how he'd been watching the race and hoping that the rhetoric would calm down a little bit and become a more inclusive discussion. And that didn't happen for him. And so he will not be endorsing Donald Trump. And he said, regardless of the impact it has on his race against Tammy Duckworth, or regardless of the impact it has on the party. That was not enough for Tammy Duckworth, though. She staged a late night, so to speak, press conference after the announcement had been made from Senator Kirk, and basically said that, you know, you supported him when he said that women are fat pigs, and you supported him when he said other racist comments. So to me, you've still supported him. And that wasn't a total surprise from the Duckworth camp, because obviously, as you say, Brian, that's been one of their big strategies, right, is trying to link Senator Kirk with Donald Trump. And so whether the background thoughts of the Kirk campaign were that they wanted to just say that, for the record, no way, we're not anywhere connected to Donald Trump. And that's, you know, I had talked to Pat Brady, former head of the Illinois Republican Party, and that was one of the things he said, was that this Kirk statement was a big day for the Kirk campaign, because it showed the Duckworth campaign, or any people that were confused, that no, Senator Kirk doesn't want Trump for president. But, you know, I think we're going to still see the Duckworth campaign continue to try and make that connection, and like they did immediately that evening. So very interesting. Same day that Donald Trump said those comments were misconstrued by people. So I have a feeling we'll be hearing a lot about this in the coming weeks.
I think we will. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Lauren Chulgen and Tony Arnold of WBEZ in Chicago. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.